The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
The world is a complicated place. You need someone to expose the political fakers, fixers, and takers, and to cut through the mindless chatter and misdirection to help you make sense of it all. That person is Dan Proft, and this is The Dan Proft Show.
Welcome back to The Dan Proft Show. You can follow us online, danproftshow.com, on social media, at Dan Proft Show. And the topic of law enforcement in a time of a pandemic. Our friend Andy McCarthy over at National Review has written about it. And there's some disturbing stories. Talked about one yesterday. That's the story of pastors being arrested, Florida, what also happened in Louisiana. The one in Florida, particularly troubling, because at least according to his attorney, there were social distancing protocols that were being abided by the congregants to the church of the pastor in Florida who was arrested. You also had this past Sunday and Monday in Greensboro, outside of Greensboro, North Carolina, street counselors, pro-lifers, arrested for violating the county stay-at-home order. Four on Sunday and seven on Monday, for a total of 11, despite the fact that the pro-life group, I guess, to which they were affiliated, had canceled its group media, and everyone was following rules for social distancing as a sidewalk counselor outside a pro-life center. That's not encouraging. Something else that's not encouraging is Seattle's police chief, Carmen Best, using her most recent chief's brief update on COVID-19 to urge residents to dial 911 if they're victims of racist name-calling. I'm not kidding. We will document and investigate every reported hate crime, said Chief Best. Even racist name-calling should be reported to police. Is that a crime? If you aren't sure if a hate crime occurred, call 911. We're here to help. That's the highest, best use of police resources in Seattle. And that says nothing of the story out last week about Department of Justice kicking around the idea of suspending habeas corpus. But there's more context to the story than was reported. And we'll start there with our friend Andy McCarthy, as I mentioned, former chief assistant U.S. attorney in Manhattan, contributing editor at National Review, author of the bestseller Ball of Collusion, The Plot to Rig an Election and Destroy a Presidency. Andy, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Dan, it's my pleasure.
So you wrote about this in National Review, that story about the prospect of the prospect of suspending habeas corpus effectively, and suggesting that it wasn't an autocratic gambit afoot by Attorney General Barr. It's a little bit more complicated than that.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, the just so everyone understands, the executive branch does not have the authority to suspend habeas corpus. So what was not on the table and what was not being talked about was the prospect of arresting people without charges and detaining them. What they were mainly trying to deal with was, number one, what do you do with people who you arrest for charges, that is, with probable cause in the regular criminal justice system, under circumstances where, because of social distancing requirements and the other things that you were just outlining in your introductory remarks, it's not the easiest thing right now for courts to convene, although I think they are able to arraign people who are arrested to get them presented to judges. But, you know, grand juries at the moment are not able to meet, at least in many places. Juries can't be convened because of these requirements. So it makes it very hard for the justice system to operate and function as it normally does. As a result of that, Congress asked the Justice Department to make some proposals for what do we do in order to confront the various problems that we have that are infringing necessarily on people's constitutional rights to be presented on charges, to have a speedy trial, to have a speedy indictment, and all that jazz. And the Justice Department made some proposals that would actually not have empowered the executive branch. They would have empowered the judiciary. The idea is that the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court would be able to issue a finding that there were emergency conditions in effect that would require the suspension of the statute of limitations that applies to all federal offenses, and it would allow chief justices in all the different 93 districts, federal districts across the country, to issue basically interest of justice continuances that would extend the timeline for the Speedy Trial Act and stuff like that. So the justice, it was not a power grab by the Justice Department. They were responding to a request from Congress. They weren't trying to empower Trump. They were actually empowering the courts. And the whole thing, I think, was much ado about nothing, because built into what the Justice Department was proposing, which, by the way, they couldn't just implement this. It would have to be enacted by Congress.
Right.
But built into it was the idea that as soon as the emergency conditions were over, the courts would issue a finding that they were over, and we would go right back to normal. So this was always going to be very temporary and driven by conditions on the ground. The whole thing was just blown way out of proportion.
Well, shame on me for accepting, I believe it was the Associated Press reporting at face value when I noticed it last week. But it also, so in addition to the troubling nature of the reporting, the other thing that's troubling to me is all of those daily briefings since that story came out, and the implication that that what I described was afoot rather than what was actually happening, as you detailed, not a single question was asked about it. Not a single question.
Yeah, you're quite right about that. And I don't understand, you know, I'm not taking a slap at the president now or the people around him. Because, man, they have other things on their minds, and they're dealing with something that's just awful to have to deal with. But I have to think that if it was raised enough that it got the president's attention that this was a story, that they would have done, even if the media hadn't asked about it, they would have done what they could to slap it down. Maybe you and I think this was a bigger deal than they did. I don't know, but I think you're quite right. I'm very surprised that didn't get more play.
Yeah, it speaks to, I guess, I don't know, the single-mindedness and the empty-headedness at the same time of so many members of the D.C. press corps, as far as I'm concerned. I wanted to get to your take, though, more generally, because we're in a time, there's some talk, not as much as I would like, about the balancing of competing interests, our public health and our economic health.
Yeah.
There's also our individual liberties as enshrined in the Constitution. There hasn't been that much talk about that, and there's some things that police have done at the local level, including in Chicago, where they broke up a funeral that inside a church. I find troubling, and I wonder if you're concerned at all about this balance that we need to strike in this during this pandemic.
Yeah, I'm really concerned about it, because even in the best of times, Dan, I think that mistakes are always made in these situations, because they're emergency conditions. They don't lend themselves easily to calm deliberation about how do we balance the ever-present tension between civil liberties and security. And what you inevitably get, even again in the best of times, is some hotheads who, you know, use their authority in what I think is a draconian way. I think we could all agree in hindsight is a draconian way. And I don't think these are the best of times. I think that what frightens me listening to you summarize these different things that have happened, where it certainly seems like the authorities have gone way overboard and in a very politicized way, broken up assemblies of people associating for perfectly good reasons, even if it's not a good idea to be associating right now. I mean, it just seems they've been very, very heavy-handed. And you have to wonder if the reason they feel they can do that, and the reason that you have a number of these incidents floating up to the fore, is that the country has changed in ways that we don't always like to think that it's changed. I mean, if they weren't politically comfortable
right.
with the idea of doing the kind of stuff that you're talking about, they wouldn't do it, right? So they have to feel like they're answering to some kind of a constituency. And I just wonder if that constituency isn't bigger and more strident than we sometimes like to think it is.
No, I think that's the operative point. I think that's exactly right. Politicians aren't doing something that, generally speaking, that the overwhelming majority are opposed to. They're doing things that the majority or a working majority, a governing majority or plurality are supportive of or conditioned to accept or some combination of the two. I think that's absolutely what's happening, and it is a bit frightening. He is Andy McCarthy, former chief assistant U.S. attorney in Manhattan, Southern District of New York, contributing editor at National Review and author of the bestseller Ball of Collusion, The Plot to Rig an Election and Destroy a Presidency. Andy, thanks as always for joining us. Appreciate it.
Dan, it's my pleasure. Take care.
You too.
Seat and sharpen your pencils. Class is in session with Professor Dan Proft and the Dan Proft Show.